very special guest today is Scott Sycamore. He's got a YouTube channel, West Side Cater, I believe is the nomenclature, and also radiotitans.com/shows/the-coz, that's K-O-Z, dash effect. So that's the Coz effect at radiotitans.com. So, Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you oh so much. It's like, what is it? It's an honor, it's a pleasure, it's all those things. It's superlative. I mean, this is that level. This is that next level, way up there. So I'm glad. This is the first video interview I've done, maybe the first time anyone's wanted to interview me at all, really. So you, no wait, the camera's there. You are the man for that. So thank you.
If you say so. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been working in the truth movement?
Oh, working. Yeah, nonprofit it is. Is it not? Well, let's see. I'm a native Los Angelino, California. That's where I currently am and grew up around here. And I guess this is the kind of place where it's probably easier than other spots to get into all the high weirdness, if you want to call it that. You know, there's so much of that kind of stuff going on in this area of the world, and maybe it just kind of filters in from a young age, whether you like it or not. I'm 31 now. I probably got into the movement, as they call it, when I was about 18, something like that. And I was sent to a somewhat tyrannical boarding school institution when I was about 17, and that alone sort of woke me up to how things operate and what was going on and just how people are treated behind the scenes and all that. And then I remember a guy there had a copy of Behold the Pale Horse and gave it to me, and I read it, and it was pretty mind-blowing. And then there was also a night watchman who was ex-military, ex-army, who worked at this school, and he, at the same time, would tell me about various things that I was kind of unaware of. All this stuff was out there in Art Bell land previous to this, I would say, but it was sort of the first time I was made aware of it. And, you know, guy telling me about photographs from the moon with buildings on them, shit like that, and all kinds of conspiratorial-ish stuff. So that really started me off when I was about 18, something like that, senior in high school era. And you know how it goes. It just snowballs from there.
Yeah.
I popped up. Yeah.
You lose all your friends. You go into the fetal position. You start wondering, why, God, why is this terrible thing happening to me? What the frack am I going to do about it? I can't be bothered doing jobs anymore. I'm going to become homeless. I'm going to smoke excess quantities of weed. You know, I know the drill.
That doesn't sound familiar at all. I don't know who you're referring to. Yeah, it's sort of like, in my case, I was already on the outs from society, I guess. I mean, as I told you, I was already at this.
I was already on my way out, man.
Yeah, man, I was the primal path to destruction. And so, yeah, it's a natural extension, I think, from there. If you have any kind of history of being a troublemaker or a rebel or this and that or a punk rocker or whatever the label may be, I think you can easily fall into such things. And yeah, that sort of went with me, but I never really spewed out much content until about a year ago, where I started making videos and really trying to like record, you know, audio and radio and all this kind of stuff. So it's really, yeah, really been the last year or so has been the time where I had to put stuff out, and I don't know, it's I feel like you know the feeling. Go ahead.
You go from being a consumer to a producer all of a sudden.
I mean, yeah, if you have any, I don't want to say conscience, but, you know, if you really are into the stuff, you get into it, you really feel that urge to put stuff back out there. And I don't make any claims to be like this original researcher or I'm going out there finding digging up information that no one else has or anything like that. I'm just trying to reanalyze, repackage what I hear and put it back out through my own filter or whatever it may be. I'm not a technician. I'm not a hard journalist, nothing like that. I'm just like everyone, a guy with an opinion, but I feel that I've put in the legwork to analyze these issues in, you know, somewhat of a unique way. Whereas most people's opinions, obviously, as you well know, are rather uninformed and just repeating what they've heard. And that's it. Just going by IMG. And you have to, most people, they want to be producers of something, but usually it's in this very shallow, I mean, I live in Hollywood, basically, you know, and we all know how that type is. Like, you just want to create stuff to make money and just appease the masses and all that. And that's fine. We all need money. We all, you know, we all got to get by. But it's like, if you know anything truthy, then you feel like you have this duty, you know, like you have this calling to get it back out there. Wake the people up, right? Get the information out. So you find a way to do it one way or another, hopefully.
Mm. Some people I've seen have done it. They had that exact urge. Oh my God, I've got to wake humanity up. I can contribute. I can do this radio show. I can do these YouTube channels or something like that. And then something in them changes and they suddenly don't care about it anymore. At all. They kind of get, what would you say? Disillusioned with it all. Because I remember when I came out here, you know, I thought I could change the world and make everything better and be a nice guy and all that kind of stuff. And I'm doing what I said I was going to do. Yet, the effect has not been, you know, as much as I would have hoped. And there have been moments where I think to myself, man, is it worth it? And for me, it's probably not worth it, but...
Now,
it's not a choice. It's not a choice that I'm making here. Now, it's just a lack of options. I can't go back to work.
Yeah, it's just what you do. You can't not do it, right? That's sort of how you're feeling?
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about it's not worth it because of the haters or just financially or...
Well, there's a whole lot of things involved that make it not worth it, you know, because... It's hard on your relationships, it's hard on your finances, it's hard on your family, and it's hard on your peace of mind. And it's just hard on your everyday life because it's a lot of work, and the engrossing, overarching nature of it can make it even more compoundingly stressful.
Oh, so you actually do work on this stuff, I see. That's that may be a difference, yeah. Because I mean, you have the show, you got that curtain in the background. You're doing a real thing. I don't know how much are you on every week. How many hours?
Five days a week, 2 hours a day minimum. That's if I'm not on anyone else's show. This last week I was on for about an extra 2 hours on the Saturday on the United We Strike radio broadcast, which we do every month. I've been on well over 100 other shows.
Right, right. Yeah, so you really are going hard with it. And it shows, it, I mean...
And that's just the radio. That doesn't include all the right. public meetings that I go to and film. Like Dr. Paul Connett came here and gave a production on fluoride, and I recorded him, edited it, uploaded it, that kind of thing. And I do that sort of thing all the time. Had a guy on here the other night who did a 4-hour confessional in front of the camera kind of thing, reading out a 56-page document that he'd done about how the government had screwed him over and everything, and I just taught him how to sort of do it. I'm trying to help everybody in the media sense of the word because there's so many good activists out there who just don't have no media savvy whatsoever, and it's actually really fracking simple. With a Mac anyway, it's just time-consuming is all.
Sure, sure. It's simple but not easy, maybe, would be the phrase.
Simple but not brief.
Brief. Lots of rendering, right, with the videos and just sitting there watching that green bar slowly go by, waiting for that so you could get to the next thing and do the next phase of the editing and all that. Yeah, I could see that. And that, by the way, that's still an issue even in very professional, you know, Pixar-ish situations. Maybe not for them, but you know what I mean. Big studios and all this stuff and video houses. A lot of it, yeah, it's sitting around and waiting for stuff to crunch. But you sound, I mean, you're going out there, you mentioned these public meetings and public gatherings and whatnot. That's
protests.
That's almost activism, you might say.
Yeah.
Right? You would put that in that category?
Yeah.
Yeah, I filmed some footage from the Occupy Los Angeles and San Diego, actually, too. But that's, I guess, the extent, really, of what I've done on that level. But I definitely enjoyed it, and I would be fine getting out there and documenting plenty of other stuff. I'm not really sure. Besides something like that, I don't know what else really has that kind of firepower. Because the other thing is, when I've gone to Occupy stuff and film stuff, always something interesting and weird happens and crazy stuff goes down. So I feel like it's hard to replicate that craziness in other fields.
Well, three words, just be there. You know, if you want good footage or something, just frickin' be there. I've been to hundreds of protests. Occupy Auckland, I made 17 videos for them. That is more than any other single person at Occupy. That's more stories than the news did on them. And they were long form videos where we have in-depth discussions, well edited, that kind of thing. And then Occupy Auckland kicks me off their Facebook page because I was asking for donations for my radio show, which they had moral disagreements with.
I feel like, well, you, I imagine you have actual video editing prowess. You can make at least semi-professional looking packages, right?
Yeah, so long as I've got the time.
But... right, the time, yeah. I feel inadequate because I don't have that skill level when it comes to videoing and everything. I put together very simple, hopefully people will see, very simple, like, picture slideshow with audio and some music stuff because that's the extent of what I can do. But, yeah, it's certainly, you know, I've at least tried to get raw footage just to put on the internet or hopefully someone else will use it for their remix video and all this stuff. So, you know, it's just, yeah, it's about getting stuff down on the page, but there's no pages anymore. Now there's screens. So get it onto the screen, like this right here.
Well, the main point that I'd advise everybody to, you know, if you're going to be a media activist, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be there, okay? So if you've got a video that looks like crap and it's like 3 minutes long or whatever, upload it. If you have hours upon hours of raw footage from a protest, upload it, you know? Raw if necessary, because then you can put Creative Commons on it, and then anybody can download those videos. Most of my videos are all Creative Commons from the countless protests and radio interviews with huge guests that we've done, so that anybody can download any of my videos and make their own. And I encourage that.
That's a set. You have to change a setting on YouTube or whatnot to allow people to download it.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
You have a choice. You can either upload them for commercial, which means I've got a partner account. Because I'd been uploading so many videos, like this was years and years and years ago. They gave me the ability to upload even longer videos and ads and all of that kind of stuff on it. But yeah, I can make things either Creative Commons or Google AdSense.
Yep. Oh, wow. Yeah. Like I have the partner thing. I can upload longer stuff, like all my radio-ish things. But, you know, like anyone else, yeah, if you want to download something off YouTube, you just go to one of a zillion free websites that just allows you to rip videos right off it. But, yeah, I'll check into that, see if I can make more things available. But, yeah, I mean, we know, you know, it got me thinking just now. I noticed this in friends of mine, like musicians and whatnot mostly, is they have this block on actually putting stuff out there. I'm sure you've seen this with people and artistic types where, you know, they're always waiting to make it more perfect, a more perfect union, better. You know, they're not quite ready to put out their album or their thing or their movie. And it just, the time keeps going and they keep waiting. And I think eventually they get it in their head like, oh, now I'm just never going to put it out. Like, it's been so long, you know, you can't, especially in this day and age, you can't wait forever to make something perfect. Like you said, it can't, don't try to be perfect, just get stuff. It's not that it's quantity over quality, because it should be quality, but you do need quantity. Especially now, I mean.
Well, it's not. It's not necessarily quality over quantity. It's something over nothing.
Yes.
I remember, I had a girl volunteering for me for a short period of time, doing the YouTube versions of my radio shows, and she was going through them intricately, like bringing in a picture of the person who was talking and making it larger when they were speaking, and then putting it back, and then bringing out another. You know, it was intensely complicated, and it looked good, but it was unnecessary because it's just a radio show. And before you know it, she'd been spending so much time consumed by doing this intricate editing detail, she would backed up like 11 shows.
Oh,
and yeah. So it's like, what's better, to have 11 shows that nobody can see that will look good eventually, or just have all those 11 shows up available for people to listen to right now?
Right, with like one picture.
Yeah, and that's what she did, and all of a sudden, boom, there we are, and we're back up to date. You know, it's the messing around in between. What I want when I'm doing media of anything is results, okay? Give me a result. Here's a half-hour video. Boom. Okay, there's a result. It's now available for people to view, such and such, blah, blah, blah. All right, easy. On to the next thing.
The proof is in the pudding. If you're an activist or a media-vist with no content, then you're it's never going to happen, you know? If you're a musician with no songs or nothing recorded, nothing out there, then no one's going to know it. And, yeah, there is this, a lot of backup. I mean, I feel like I'm doing too much sometimes when I take an extra hour to re-listen to my own stuff and put pictures with it. And I'm like, oh, God, what, 8 people are going to see this and I'm taking this time to do that, you know, or whatever negative thoughts you have in your head to discourage you. But, yeah, it's got to, you know, my stuff gets backed up. It's a week after we record it. It doesn't seem as timely and all that after that. But, yeah, it's, you must be somewhat current, you know. I had another radio show that I stopped doing in December, you know, indefinitely. And it's not even like, you can't even find the page anymore. They've re-updated the whole site. I couldn't even link it to you. You know, it's like, bam, you slip for a minute and suddenly erased from history, right? You're erased from the archives. And just stay on top of it. Yeah. Don't wait forever. Something over nothing. That's the theme of this show, Vinny. This interview's theme is something over nothing. Because we're doing it, you know? We're doing it. Like, we, 2 weeks ago or whatever, this wasn't even a consideration.
Yeah.
Now we're actually producing something. Bravo. To you, to people out there, congrats to everybody.
Yeah.
The whole Eastwood Nation. Is that what you call your viewers? No.
No. I am the Eastwood Nation, and I rigorously protect my borders.
Borders, language, and culture. That's what they say here in America, all the racist right-wingers and everything. BLC, borders, language, culture. Preserve. We have to preserve them.
And we're talking about something over nothing, right? And it's just about, like, my three favorite words. I like to have favorite words in threes, so my three favorite words are I don't know. My least three favorite words are I don't care. And three favorite words in a phrase is making shit up. And my other three favorite words in a phrase is getting shit done.
Hey now.
Right.
Common shit theme there.
Now you'll be surprised how much you can get done if you're just making it up and going on to then getting it done and then going on to the next thing.
Does that relate to fake it till you make it? Would you say that's similar?
No, I'm quite genuine. I don't research my guests or well, basically it's like time management.
Clearly.
Okay, so here's what you want to spend your time on. Do you want your time spent on making the stuff look really pretty, knowing precisely what you're talking about, Then there's the mechanics of it, which is just doing the radio show or the video or something like that, and then uploading it. Okay, so I've taken out basically 2 out of 3 of the most time-consuming elements from being a media person. So I don't know what I'm talking about, who I'm talking to, but I find out through being inquisitive. And I've got a lot of experience in a lot of these things. You know, just fly with it, be comfortable, be happy. And then in terms of making it look pretty, I've got certain methodologies down with my video editing and all of that kind of stuff where I just go shink, 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 shink. And it may not look, you know, utterly fabulous, but it looks a heck of a lot better than, you know, low-quality, crappy video that a lot of people have to be forced to wake up. But, you know.
Sure, it's not. No one... Everyone nowadays, they don't expect perfection on stuff like this. They know it's not going to happen. They know that we're not having a team of creative, technical people and producers and shit working on this stuff. It's just it's a solo operation. It's a indie. It's a DIY thing, and that's what all this stuff comes from. That's the whole nature of it. That's why we can be uncensored and say what we want. You know. People always, people are always so impressed. How do they make this show? How do they do this, produce this? It's like, well, they have dozens of people working on it. That's how. That are getting paid, too. Or not getting paid, but working as an intern. You get what I'm saying? So, yeah, give me 30 people. Give you a staff of people. I'm sure you could produce some pretty, pretty, pretty stuff. But really, I mean, isn't this right here, these faces, that's all the prettiness you need. That's the real special effect. Right.
It's a minimal one, and of course there can always be improvements, but you know, you're right, it does come down to staffing and time and money and energy and all of that kind of stuff. And I've tried to what's my business model again? MMR, make myself redundant, so that basically a monkey could do my job.
Even the hosting, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Hosting's not that difficult if you follow a bunch of simple rules, but I inject something very unique into my hosting that I don't think a lot of other hosts do, which is the humor, and sometimes I'm very kind of ethereal with my insights and what have you, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of fun, and that's what the show's really about, is to have fun.
It's like what they say about the thug lifestyle. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun at all, right? It might be dangerous and you might get killed and all that shit, but it's fun while it lasts, right? And I do notice that with you, is you actually try to have some levity and humor, which is from someone like myself, is always welcome, because there's no shortage of self-serious, overly self-righteous media people, radio hosts, whatever you want to call them. And anytime you bring humor... It's good. It's just a good thing. It's bubbly. It makes me happy, you know. And it's funny because I've thought about this a lot recently, how if you try to be funny and humorous, maybe you're seen as not serious by certain people, which, of course, literally you are being not serious. But I feel like that can be taken and expanded to like, well, you're not serious about what you do or your show or your career, life, whatever. But, you know, I think that's...
Well, I think the results speak for themselves. And I've been accused of being unprofessional. Sure. And I like to say that the world's currently run by professionals. How's that working out for you?
Mm-hmm. The professional I know is the freaking hitman from the movie. You know, people... Really, what a lot of this comes down to is just flaws in human thinking. I don't know if they can be corrected necessarily, or at least not now. It's always an individual case. You can't change humanity as a whole in one fell swoop. But we have these thinking errors where people seem to people project qualities onto others that are just mistaken, I would say. Like you said, it's run by professionals, because the mass public sees these professionals and these successful, confident people, and they actually think of them as good and trustworthy and someone to look up to. just because they're there. They're up here. You're down here. So they're like, boy, that person. It's that whole manipulation thing of look up to these people, job creators, your betters, your bosses, the successes in life. You know, it's just they've done studies. You know, if you're more attractive of a person physically, people will think you're a better person inside. They'll think you have a better personality, better soul even. And it's just, it's very bizarre. And it creates these results that we've seen. I mean, what you were referring to, the world itself, you know, the pros, the CEOs, the managers, everyone, the white collared. And, Just go in my place.
Well, it's a logical fallacy to appeal to authority, first of all. If somebody is in an authoritative position and you believe and carry on and play by their rules and everything that they say, it's not logical. Because everybody could be wrong. They're only human, aren't they? You know? What I don't like is when people refuse to admit that they're wrong. I believe... what was his name? The guy who wrote Tom Sawyer, the famous American author.
Mark Twain?
Yeah. He said when an honest man is confronted with the truth that he's wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
Mm.
So the way I conduct my show is open book, I could be wrong about everything. And if somebody produces a piece of evidence that contradicts me, I don't argue with them again. No, you're just a communist or whatever. We'll call them names or something. I'll inquire a little further. And if they can explain away my previously held belief, that previously held belief evaporates. And then I latch onto this new belief based on the evidence. And I just keep going. And I say, apologize. I've been wrong all this time. Wouldn't be the first time either.
That might take some actual humility, huh?
Yeah. I'm wrong about heaps and heaps and heaps of stuff. And every single time I've let myself get ahead of myself, I've wound up falling on my own frickin' face.
Ah, man. But the hair is still in place, and that's what matters. And I think, see, with my own self, I feel like I'm actually right a lot of the time. And, you know, someone like... what I do on the show, my shows and everything, we deal a lot in predictions and what we think is going to happen in the next year or whatever. And obviously, never are people proven right full time on stuff like that. You know, I mean, go back a few years, look at predictions from people. Yeah, some are right, some are wrong. You get it half right, whatever. But no, you know, no one can foretell the future that we know of, and so it's always going to be a crapshoot. I feel like. With me, what I was saying is I feel like I am right. I tell people I'm not right all the time, just 90% of the time. 10% of the time, I could be completely fucking wrong about everything. Still a good batting average, but you still have that 10%, and then just one little thing of being wrong makes you look stupid, right, to a certain person. Oh, you were wrong about this. And the other thing is it's not necessarily good to be right about everything to the people, the mass people out there, your friends, your family, you know, you referred it earlier. You just look like, you know, you don't get any points for it. It's like, oh, you're right. You're still an asshole. That's sort of the attitude.
Yeah.
From a lot.
Well, we should see the prospect of being wrong as an opportunity, as something grand, as something very, very useful indeed. Because... after all, those are the best lessons to realize that, hey, I've spent my entire life thinking everything was this way, but it was actually this way. That's a lesson that you cannot afford to pass up. And people avoid being wrong because they think that when they're wrong that they put to shame or something like that. That shame is a lesson upon you that you shouldn't have been thinking you were so right all the time anyway. Look at the geometric growth of the amount of human knowledge at the moment with the digital age, the information age, as it were. apparently our knowledge base is growing by like 50% every year or something of that nature. So theoretically speaking, the 50% of knowledge that currently exists today could be the 50% of knowledge that's disproven by the next day's worth of knowledge that accrues, you know?
It could be.
So as soon as you learn something, it could become wrong the next day. Kind of like as soon as you buy a computer, it becomes out of date the next day. And we're always discovering new things. And people don't want to move forward and keep discovering and make things clearer and better for themselves or the entire world. They don't have any interest in that. What they have an interest in is keeping themselves with a straight face, making sure that people believe everything that they say because they believe wholeheartedly in a religious term that they are the one person who's correct and everybody else needs to just shut up because their ideas are irrelevant. And this has happened to me a couple of times before, you know, like, oh, you're just talking about this and the other. Well, hold on a second. Are you saying you know everything that there is to know that's important and therefore anything that comes out of my mouth, a person that you're not familiar with in any way, shape or form, couldn't possibly in any way, shape or form have any bearing on your current lifestyle or any information that you've ever absorbed thus far in your entire life, right? You know everything? Is that your argument for not listening to me?
People certainly think they do. I mean, it's about maintaining your identity and your ego, which is all about consistency. And I am this, and I am always this, and I don't change, I don't waver. It's a George W. Bushian personality mode, almost. You know, like, we got results. You know, we saw to it. Oh, no, I'm right, you're wrong. There's no debate about it. And I was thinking what you're saying with the knowledge canceling out previous knowledge. I saw that a lot of that recently with this whole Boston bombing affair where like people were talking to me as it was going on the second day, the third day. And they're like, oh, what is it? Tell me what's going to analyze it. What happened? You know, who did it? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, you got to give me a couple weeks because everything coming out now is going to be false or disproven or changed, the story, you know, official story. This is how it always happens. And, you know, some of that's just because of regular, the nature of stuff. And you think one thing and another thing proves to be true. And then, of course, there's the conspiratorial layer cake on top of it, which, oh boy, there goes my keyboard, where you know, they put out false information on purpose and everything. But yeah, it's because in these cases, 9/11, whatever you want, I mean, how much information comes out after the fact that just goes right on top of the other stuff and contradicts it and makes it obsolete. And yeah, it's like, not only is it hard to follow, it fucks up people's ability to look at something properly, to analyze it properly, and just confuses people, especially the people that don't really, you know, think about the stuff and want the official story, the news watchers. It's TMI. It really is. That's that stupid, you know, phrase from whatever 8 years ago. When was it popular? I don't know. Too much information, TMI. Yeah, you know it. That teeny bopper phrase. It really is applicable to our modern era. There really much information. If you think you got the handle on all the info that's out there, you're insane. I know there's an info war, and we're all fighting in it, but that doesn't mean you have all the info. You know, it's crazy.
Well, yeah. The man who thinks he knows everything obviously knows nothing, and the man who thinks that he knows nothing probably knows enough.
He knows enough at that starting point to get to know more.
Yeah, that's what great philosophers all throughout the years have said. You know, they looked upon as the wisest people that have ever walked the earth, like frickin' Confucius, Plato, or whatever. And they all pretty much say the same thing. I know only one thing, and that is that I know very little.
Yeah, they know to flow with the currents, the Taoist thing. You know, you can't. What's around the corner might disprove what was back around the previous bend of the river. So yeah, you know, cause time is always flowing. Everything's always, the only constant is change, right? So if you're locked in this one thing from this one time and this one day, one personality, whatever, everything's going to move past you. You know, it's physics, as they like to say. It's just physics. Yeah.
See, but even just physics, it keeps getting changed and differentiated now. There's all these people coming up with this weird technology today that just kind of blows thermal dynamics and gravity and all of this kind of stuff like way out of the water. And suddenly I'm thinking, man, physics ain't so solid no more.
Oh, hey now. You got it right. That is a very literal statement right there. Because that's what they say now, right? Nothing's solid, supposedly. It's the atoms are just vibrating in a empty space.
Yep.
That's what we call it.
Yeah, and they're going to tell you that atoms are like a little ball and stuff like that, you know? What have you done, bro? How did you know it was a ball? Did you take a picture of it? You can't zoom down into an atomic level. You don't know what you're talking about, physicist.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are pretty much just people getting paid to come up with theories at a university, and you know, until it's applied, it's just theoretical physics. It's a theory. It's a physics-piracy theory. That's what, you know, that's what it boils down to. And I know these advances have brought us this technology, and they are working towards stuff to get to this Star Trek-ish level eventually, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just people having to constantly promote these new theories and make themselves look great, like they're right about stuff. And, you know,
there's a lot of subterfuge within the scientific community I've found as well. Like some of the great people that you would expect are, you know, the smartest minds and the top in the field and stuff like that. It turns out that there are a lot of them, like, say, Dr. Stephen Hawking, for example, are mired in accusations of stealing other people's work and then presenting it as their own.
Well, you know about the whole Einstein thing, where he worked in the Swiss patent office when he was a young man, and as the theory goes, basically he just took all his ideas from there. He had other people's patents, their ideas for stuff lying around. He had full access and just sort of went with it, and you saw that, just like the whole Tesla Edison sort of beef that went on supposedly, and you know, Edison stole his ideas and you put them on the underground and suppress them and everything. Just like, yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard that about Stephen Hawking, but it makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, so Mehran Tavakoli from the Keshe Foundation told me that.
Well, you know, it's funny. When you mentioned about Hawking, I remember, are you familiar with the comedian David Cross? He's on Arrested Development and all that.
I haven't seen Arrested Development.
Yeah, but I don't like it, but it's David Cross is an American stand-up comedian, and I remember in like he did a special in the late 90s, and he had a joke about like Stephen Hawking with the prostitute, and the joke was, you know, he made his voice like sort of like, oh fuck me, you whore, you know, whatever, all that stuff, dirty stuff from the voice box. And it turns out that the real Stephen Hawking apparently frequents a strip club, sex club type place out here, you know, near Pasadena, JPL, out here, outskirts of LA. So the joke about him actually is a reality. This thing that was so far-fetched and crazy, whatever, 15 years ago. And now it's like, no, the smartest man in the world does go and indulge all these, you know, freaking stripper fantasies. So it's just another thing popping the bubble, popping the myth, and, you know, showing that we're in that time where jokes, something that's so absurd as to be funny, is actually everyday reality.
He's one of the very few men in the world that can look at a stripper and drool and have people get away with it.
Yeah. I mean, not only because he's, you know, I don't know what his bodily function, he's in that wheelchair, but yeah,
maybe this is a bad move, you know, like bashing a disabled person's sexual habits, man.
No, it's not bashing, of course. Let's put that out there. There is no problem. I am not like a moralistic crusader where saying going to a strip club's bad or anything like that. But it's pointing out the absurdity that, you know, these people, it's back to that morality thing. Oh, you're smart. You're a physicist. Oh, you're definitely moral. You're definitely a good person because of that. And really, there's no correlation with this idea stealing thing. I mean, that's such a common thing. It's almost like, you can't even bring it up, because where do ideas start and where do they end, and who creates them and who, you know, brings them to light in the first place? Do we know? Is it the patent? The guy who has the patent?
I see this. I see this as a phenomenon that doesn't just affect the scientific community. I think it affects any branch of companies, governments, entertainment industries, anywhere where power and control concentrates, essentially. This is where ideas will be stolen and people will be run out by people who don't have a conscience, you know, and will advance themselves forward and up. Why do you think Parliament is full of scumbags? Why do you think all the major Fortune 500 companies are run by psychos? You know, it's pretty straightforward. The same symptom of scumbaggery seems to infect the whole community and the world cross-sectored. And it's only really in areas where there are elements of power and control that can be taken advantage of. And that's why I'm kind of... Recently, I've been starting to rethink, you know, is there actually a good reason for corporations to exist? Like big, massive, powerful, scary-type companies and things like that? If you've got that amount of sway that you can practically buy lobbyists that will force a government to more or less do your bidding and create the country as your corporation wants it to be, I don't think they should have that much power, bro. Like, it's freaking dangerous. What if they go rogue? What if they go out of control? Hey, wait, we'll have what we've got now, a completely fracked society full of fat people.
Hey, now, what are you trying to say about me?
No, I'm fat. I'm fat too, bro. And this is the thing. We're all getting affected by this. Then every single frickin' where we look, there's all this fast food and stuff. And, and goodness knows how much frickin' GMOs and stuff. Yes. Like, it's like obesity is triggering that and stuff. 80% of U.S. adults over the age of 25 are like overweight to obese or something like that. We have a mammoth problem. In every sense of the word, and it's not just that; it's a psychological thing as well. Because we've got damaged people everywhere who've been fracked over by these fracks.
Yeah, there's nothing, as I've learned in my real life, no one likes an angry fat guy. Okay, you got to be jolly, or you got to be like a skinny, brooding, grunge type angry guy. You know, doesn't work when you meet in the middle. I mean, yeah, and you see people like Chris Christie getting the lap band surgery to slim down, supposedly, because he knows in there that the, you know, it's just not a good image. The whole overweightness is not a good image to project. And to go back, it sounds like you were specifically referring to Monsanto when talking about these scary corporations, because they are the evil corporation of right now worldwide, and everyone seems to know it. And yeah, I mean, that's going to a whole different level. You know, we all know why these corporations need to exist, quote unquote, because they make stuff, you know, they make these products that we all need and love and everything. But it seems like even then there's that split. It's like you have your Apples that make stuff that everybody loves, but you don't have to have it. You're not, you know, you don't need an Apple device to survive, theoretically. I know you do here and poly weird or whatever, but, you know, but when it comes to food and what you put in your body and pharmaceutical companies and stuff that really, like, you know, physically gets into you and affects you, then that's like, it's a whole different ballgame, you know, beyond that. Then it's affecting everyone. I mean, you know, the aforementioned Apple, yeah, they have their Chinese slave factories and that sucks, but no one's going to frickin' get too huffy about that when it really doesn't affect them personally. But oh, well, you putting the GMO in my vegetables, and you know, that's going to rile people up everywhere. I mean, it's a global thing now, right? You know that it's a little oddball. I don't know. It's the people, when you have something you want, you have the power, you need more. You got to suck more up to yourself, right? So when they're already in the positions of being able to do something, then you can do more things, and it spirals out of control. It feeds, we the public feed this success, this faux success, you know. Oh, give them more what they want. They're so great. They're so successful. Give them the breaks. Give them the freaking extra subsidies, whatever. Give them that contract, you know, to freaking GMO-ify every pig and stalk of corn out there in the front. We don't even know. It's like, these news stories, all the shit that's going on, we don't see it. We just hear secondhand reports. Like, I've never been to a Monsanto bio mutant farm facility, but apparently they're out there. I don't know. Agribusiness. I don't see where shit's coming from. If you're, that's what real, this is what real journalists do, by the way. Take note, people out there. You go and you find shit out.
There's a good documentary out there called The World According to Monsanto. It's actually made by a French journalist.
Right.
And very simple, quite straightforward film. Just has a look at what kind of terrible things this company does to people. You know, there's so many people out there who are sick with debilitating diseases due to Monsanto chemicals that they handled that they were told were safe. There's people now right at this very second sucking back milk that has pus in it.
Pus.
Because of Monsanto. Pus in the milk.
Now that's worth getting your hands on, I think.
Mm-hmm. And the journalists who uncovered this, who were working for Fox News, lost their jobs. All right, because Fox News got a big letter from Monsanto's lawyers saying, if you release this story, boom.
Angry letter. Yeah, it's like what, they have teenagers popping their zits out and just making milk out of the pus that flies out of there? I mean,
They're giving injections to the cows to make them produce more milk, and it makes them prone to infection, so they have to give them antibodies and antibiotics, and it starts to grow pus in the udders, and that comes out in the milk.
Eesh. That just sounds grody, as they say.
Just think about a nice pussy udder just...
Oh, yeah. Raw. We need raw milk.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? In the U.S., it's like Ron Paul gets mad that you can't squirt raw milk out of there. But yeah, that's the thing. Even the raw milk may not be so raw now. We have so many chemicals just flying around in a zillion different directions in the air, the water, the food. Like, who could possibly keep track of all this?
They're throwing frickin' phosphate fertilizer all over the grass and everything to get it to grow, and that leaches the other nutrients out of the soil, which means that the cow's not getting as much nutrients, and after it processes off, the milk doesn't have any nutrients, and then they homogenize it, and then they and then they pasteurize it, and then they ship it out, and they have it, I don't know, goodness knows how long, in the back of a truck, chilled or whatever, so by the time the milk gets to you, it's pretty old, okay?
Right.
It's just, this is what happens when you have corporate chains of command. This is what happens when you have centralization. My beef with the world has nothing to do really inherently with corporations or governments or people or anything like that. It has to do with the very idea of centralization. Centralization of all kinds. Centralizations of power, centralizations of wealth. It's just not good. Even the fact that we've got big cities and things like that, and we're all centralizing into here, and then using centralized power plants and everything like that. No. We should be able to live wherever the frack we want, have our own energy devices generating the energy on our homes, basically more or less for free, that are totally self-contained, that have the ability to turn all your raw sewage into grey water to water the garden with, and then fertilize it, and so on and so forth, composting. There are a number of different ways that in the old hippie earthship sense of the world that we could be doing today, but except using modern technology and using modern innovation so that we don't have to live in a society that's completely toxic, that destroys everything that we can't see. That's scares me, what I can't see, what I can't see being destroyed right now. I can't see the 500,000 dump trucks globally suddenly going into massive landfills everywhere and contaminating it with used needles from New York City and organic hazardous waste bags from hospitals with parts of people's stomach that have just been stapled shut, sealed inside it, and so on and so forth. I can't see any of that. And the fact that I can't see what's destroying me and what's killing me and what's destroying me, myself, and my planet, it actually kind of irks me.
Yeah. It's a fracking shame. it's the body snatcher culture, you know? It's the invisible shit getting into your cells and getting into your brain waves and bloodstream and whatnot. Have you ever been to a landfill at all?
Like an open landfill that's actually being put in there? Nah, bro.
Yeah. Like,
been to the dump a couple of times?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. There's a landfill, garbage fill, you know, not too far from where I am here. And I went there when my friend was picking up some wood or so, or maybe he was dumping stuff there. But, yeah, it's just like right there in the middle of basically a suburban residential neighborhood. It's a freaking mile high mountain of trash. Like, people go, there's dust blowing, you know, freaking out of it. It's getting in your eyes and stuff. And yeah, it's really nothing too pleasant. It's almost like it was so crazy just to go to a spot like that and realize that it's there and there's people like picking up extra wood or whatever from it. But yeah, I mean, just the wind blowing stuff. I mean, we got the Santa Ana winds out here, and that's, we all know people get allergies, you know, and it's that season. You have the season for the flu and the cold and all this stuff flying around in the air. And that's that X factor, which is going to push stuff, you know, to the brink. If there was some sort of chemical release or intoxicant spill, we saw this with Fukushima. I don't know exactly what's going on there right now, but, you know, all these fears of the ocean taking the rig and dumping it in California or just in the United States or wherever. And, yeah, we don't know. That's the kind of stuff that's not controlled. You know, politics can be controlled, media, whatever, corporate stuff. But we're talking about the earth, you know, and, like, the natural cycles of the planet and wind and ocean, everything. That stuff is not controlled by the powers that be. That's still actual raw nature. And it's us getting into it and injecting ourselves and causing this chemical chaos of bullshit. That's going to be what we're going to have to deal with. That is the scary stuff, as you say. And people are hip to this, obviously, with the global warming and the Monsanto and the, you know, all that organic foods and everything. But it's not going to be enough unless there's a real, really real shift in what, how the, you know, we do stuff. But that's not going to happen with our corporate control contacts, you know.
Well, they'll prevent it.
What's that?
The corporations will prevent any solutions from coming out that they don't control.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, as they say, you know, the capitalistic run amok system is going to fuck up, you know, our beautiful natural world. Already has, not is going to. It's all this stuff is going on. All this stuff that they tell you about the future and fear this and fear that, it's going on somewhere right now. It's just a process of it moving around and affecting you, because that's all people care about, is, you know, when it affects them. And
it's so invisible a lot of the time. In New Zealand, in the late 60s, early 70s, they sprayed, like, real bad, nasty chemicals that were, like, one part Agent Orange, one part something else, kind of all over New Zealand farmland. And you got people who are, like, sick and dying and stuff like that, and the corporation denies it, the government denies it, because they approved it and recommended it and got it and gave them subsidies and all of that kind of stuff, of course. And now you got people suffering all the way up till today, because a bunch of people wanted to make some frickin' money and told everybody else that spraying incredibly dangerous stuff, which they knew was harmful all over their pristine frickin' farmland, was a good idea, especially if it was to get rid of a few weeds that were prickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we gotta, it's just, we hear constantly, it drums into your head all this fucked up stuff that is being perpetrated in the name of the dollar, or the, you know, petrodollar or whatever, yen and shit, that we just know it. We have to resist against it, whatever form that takes, whatever is in your heart to do so. That's what must be done. And you know, you could talk about the money system and how it needs to be changed or abolished or any of that sort of thing. But we're in this now, and people got to stop assuming that people are good in general, or that because someone's you know, corporate or whatever, that they're good. And look at everyone on an individual basis, and just not trust anyone. You know, figure out what's going on with you. Figure out people. judge, yes, judge their personalities, root out the bad ones. It's not easy, but people got to look at others deeper. You know, don't be fooled by this positive thinking spin and let everyone steamroll over you just because they're higher up or they've told you to be docile and, just be happy, let it all take its course. No, like, be vigilant, get at them, be the wolf at the door, or else, we're going to be advantageized, taken advantage of, and, thumbscrewed into oblivion. Mm. Not the Tom Cruise movie, but similar to it.
Well, yeah. I've got an analogy here. It's called the tactic of the cactus. You know how we're under attack from every single direction, They're coming from behind you, they're coming from in front of you, they're coming from the side, they're coming from underneath, they're coming from above,
Yep.
The way humanity protects itself from these kind of things is it kind of forms itself into sort of like a sociological cactus. For every conspiracy, for every item of scumbaggery, there is usually an activist or decent person within that particular area, within that particular field, for whom this is their perfect issue, and only they can make a frickin' difference in that particular thing, and the responsibility falls to them. And in so doing, they create a spine that juts out, that pierces a particular conspiracy as it comes in to attack him. And without even trying to organize anything, there's spines covering the human cactus from every direction. And now, it turns out that you can't pull off a false flag. You can't without it being exposed. You can't release a new dangerous drug without it being exposed, and so on and so forth. It's because people took personal responsibility for being the nasty little prick in the thorn in the side of the scumbags themselves. And that's the tactic of the cactus.
Yep, become a porcupine. It's really that's what it's all about, We're going, fuck, train of thought.
Well, actually, we've almost run out of time.
We're so low. Yeah, we're almost there. Time just keeps moving. Yeah, it's the plans. We are going up against the big plans, right? So it's getting to the point where all the stuff's exposed, so it's either big shit or nothing. Here's what I have. Strike the root. Don't just hack off the branches. We're going for the roots now. And that's it, all these things are pierced by the needles, and now we need to pull up that Monsanto Venus flytrap conspiratorial juggernaut that's out there and really just shake it out to dry, People gotta know. If they know, knowledge is power, that's a cliche, but, take your power. Take it. Go piss on some Monsanto crops. That's your first act. It's your first order.
I think that might make them healthier.
Possibly, yeah.
They aluminium resistant and urine dependent crops.
Some people drink their own urine and it makes them healthy and live long. So we don't know. Health is all relative. But yeah, but do shit. Do something. That's my message. It's very, very simple.
Yep. As Edmund Burke says, the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. So the solution's frickin' simple, ladies and gentlemen. Don't do nothing.
Yeah.
All right,
and
so...
Yeah.
Scott Sycamore has been my guest. YouTube.com/WestsideCater and RadioTitans.com/shows/the-cause-effect. That's a really, really long URL to be giving out. I'll have it on the screen for you. Enjoy his stuff if you've enjoyed listening to him so far. And we'll see you again sometime, bro.
Yeah, thank you. Hit me up, YouTube, whatever, people. Email me, westsidecater@gmail.com. That's it. Get at me. Really glad to be on this thing, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Enjoy yourself, bro.
Viral.